Chapter 13. Curtis sat at a table in the Western Archives Division of the Union Pacific Railroad's office in Omaha, Nebraska, surrounded by high shelves filled with ledgers and account books of reports on train operations. During the 9 days since he launched his search, he had scoured the records of 4 different railroads and the Wells Fargo stage lines, trying to find a link for how the Butcher Bandit escaped capture after committing his robberies and hideous murders. It was an exercise in futility. Nothing fell into place. He had begun with the stagecoach possibilities. Most of the stage lines were gone by 1906. Wells Fargo still held the monopoly, with lines extending several thousand miles over overland express routes in remote areas that were not serviced by railroads. But the schedules did not fall into the proper times. There were 1,600 different company railroads across the nation in 1906, with 220,000 miles of track among them. 50 of the largest had 1,000 miles of track each. Curtis had narrowed the number of companies down to 5. They were the railroads with scheduled runs through the towns hit by the bandit. "Would you like a cup of coffee?" Curtis looked up from a train schedule record into the face of a little man standing no more than 5 feet 2 inches. His name was Nicholas Culhane, and his biscuit-brown-streaked graying hair was brushed forward over his head to cover the receding baldness. The ferret-brown eyes shifted with amazing frequency, and he wore a thinly clipped mustache whose pointed ends extended a good inch on either side of his lips. He walked with a slight stoop and wore spectacles with lenses that magnified his eyes. Curtis was amused at the helpful little man with the springy step. He was the perfect stereotype of a keeper of musty records in an archive. "No, thank you." Curtis paused to glance at his pocket watch. "I never drink coffee in the afternoon." "Having any luck?" asked Culhane. Curtis shook his head wearily. "None of the passenger trains ran close to the time the bandit robbed the banks." "I pray you catch the murdering scum," Culhane said, his voice suddenly turned angry. "You sound like you hate him."
"I have a personal grudge."
"Personal?" Culhane nodded. "My closest cousin and her little boy were killed by the butcher at the bank in McDowell, New Mexico." "I'm sorry," Curtis said solemnly.
"You must catch and hang him."
Culhane struck a fist on the table, causing the schedule book lying open to tremble and flip its pages.
"He has got away with his crimes far too long."
"I assure you, the Van Dorn agency is working night and day to bring him to justice." "Have you found anything at all that might trace him?" Culhane asked anxiously. Curtis raised his hands in a helpless gesture. "All we've discovered is that he is missing the little finger on his left hand. Besides that, we have nothing."
"Did you check out the stagecoach lines?"
"I spent a day in the Wells Fargo Records Department. It was a dead end. None of their schedules put them in town within 4 hours of the robberies. More than enough time for the bandit to evade capture."
"And the passenger trains?"
"The sheriff and marshals telegraphed surrounding towns to stop all trains and examine the passengers for anyone who looked suspicious. They even searched all luggage in hopes that one of the bags might contain the stolen currency, but they turned up no evidence, nor could they make an identification. The bandit was too smart. The disguises he used to rob and murder were too original and too well executed. The law officers had little or nothing to go on."
"Did time schedules work out?"
"Only 2, Curtis replied tiredly. "The departure times on the others didn't coincide with the events." Culhane rubbed his thinning hair thoughtfully.
"You've eliminated stagecoaches and passenger trains. What about freight?"
"Freight trains?
Did you check out the departure times on those?"
Curtis nodded. There we have a different story. The trains I've been able to find in the right place at the right time left the robbed towns within the required times.
Then you have your answer, Culhane said.
Curtis didn't reply immediately. He was tired, on the verge of sheer exhaustion, and depressed that he was no further along and had made no discoveries. Inwardly, he cursed the butcher bandit. It didn't seem humanly possible the man could be so obscure, so will-o'-the-wisp, so able to defy all attempts at detection. He could almost see the man laughing at the inept efforts of his pursuers. At last, he said, "You underestimate the law enforcement officials. They searched the boxcars of all the freight trains that passed through the towns during the specified time limits. What about the boxcars that were switched on to local sidings to be hauled later to other destinations by incoming trains? He could have dodged the posses by hiding in a freight car." Curtis shook his head. The posses searched all empty cars and found no sign of the bandit.
"Did they check out the ones that were loaded?" Culhane questioned.
"How could they? The cars were locked tight. There's no way the bandit could have entered them." Culhane grinned like a fox on a hot scent. "I guess nobody told you that the train brakemen all carry keys that will open the locks on the loading doors in case of fire."
"I was not aware of that angle," said Curtis.
The steel-rimmed spectacles slid down Culhane's nose.
"It's certainly something to think about."
"Yes, it is," Curtis mused, his mind beginning to turn. "We're looking at a process of elimination. The posses claimed there were no tracks leading out of town to follow, which means our man didn't ride a horse. There is almost no chance he could have taken a stagecoach, and it appears unlikely he bought a ticket and traveled out of town as a passenger on a train. He also failed to be spotted in an empty boxcar, which leaves loaded boxcars as the only means of transportation that was not examined," Culhane persisted.
"You may be onto something," said Curtis thoughtfully.
A peculiar expression crossed Curtis's face as he began to envision a new scenario.
"That leaves a whole new avenue to follow.
Now I have to go through freight car records to study the cars that made up those specific trains, who owned them, their manifest, and their ultimate destination."
"Not an easy chore," said Culhane. "You'll have to check out hundreds of freight cars from a dozen trains."
"Like a piece of a puzzle. Find the boxcar that was parked on a nearby siding in all of the robbed towns on the days of the robberies.
I'll be happy to help you with the Union Pacific freight records."
"Thank you, Mr. Culhane." Two of the freight trains in question were hauled by Union Pacific. "Just tell me which towns they were at, and I'll dig out the records that give the cars serial numbers, their ownership, and the agent who arranged and paid for their transportation."
"You've been a great help to me, and I'm grateful," Curtis said sincerely.
"I'm the one who is grateful, Mr. Curtis. I never thought I would be instrumental in bringing the butcher bandit, the killer of my cousin and her child, to justice." 4 hours later, with Culhane's able assistance, Curtis had the information that gave him a solid direction to investigate. Now all he had to do was research the archives of the Southern Pacific, the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, and the Denver and Rio Grande Railroads to confirm Culhane's theory. By nightfall, he was on a train to Los Angeles and the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe archives. Too inspired to sleep, he stared at his reflection in the window since it was too dark to see the landscape roll by outside. He was optimistic that the end of the trail seemed to be over the next hill and around the next bend.